Chapter 154. Why argue? ... returned Mr. Inspector in a comfortable sort of remonstrance. Ain't it enough that I propose that you shall come along with me? ... for what reason? ... Lord bless my soul and body. ... returned Mr. Inspector. I wonder at it in a man of your education. Why argue? ... what do you charge against me? ... I wonder at you before a lady. ... said Mr. Inspector, shaking his head reproachfully. I wonder, brought up as you have been, you haven't a more delicate mind. I charge you, then, with being some way concerned in the Harmon murder. I don't say whether before, or in, or after, the fact. I don't say whether with having some knowledge of it that hasn't come out. ... You don't surprise me. I foresaw your visit this afternoon. ... Don't. ... said Mr. Inspector. Why argue? It's my duty to inform you that whatever you say will be used against you. ... I don't think it will. ... But I tell you it will. ... said Mr. Inspector. Now, having received the caution, do you still say that you foresaw my visit this afternoon? ... Yes. And I will say something more, if you will step with me into the next room. ... With a reassuring kiss on the lips of the frightened Bella, her husband, to whom Mr. Inspector obligingly offered his arm, took up a candle, and withdrew with that gentleman. They were a full half hour in conference. When they returned, Mr. Inspector looked considerably astonished. I have invited this worthy officer, my dear, said John, to make a short excursion with me in which you shall be a sharer. He will take something to eat and drink, I dare say, on your invitation, while you are getting your bonnet on. Mr. Inspector declined eating, but assented to the proposal of a glass of brandy and water. Mixing this cold, and pensively consuming it, he broke at intervals into such soliloquies as that he never did know such a move, that he never had been so graveled, and that what a game was this to try the sort of stuff a man's opinion of himself was made of. Concurrently with these comments, he more than once burst out a laughing, with the half-enjoying and half-piqued air of a man who had given up a good conundrum, after much guessing, and been told the answer. Bella was so timid of him, that she noted these things in a half-shrinking, half-perceptive way, and similarly noted that there was a great change in his manner towards John. That coming along with him deportment was now lost in long musing looks at John, and at herself, and sometimes in slow heavy rubs of his hand across his forehead, as if he were ironing cut the creases which his deep pondering made there. He had had some coughing and whistling satellites secretly gravitating towards him about the premises, but they were now dismissed, and he eyed John, as if he had meant to do him a public service, but had unfortunately been anticipated. Whether Bella might have noted anything more, if she had been less afraid of him, she could not determine, but it was all inexplicable to her, and not the faintest flash of the real state of the case broke in upon her mind. Mr. Inspector's increased notice of herself, and knowing way of raising his eyebrows, when their eyes by any chance met, as if he put the question, don't you see? ... augmented her timidity, and, consequently, her perplexity. For all these reasons, when he and she and John, at towards 9 o'clock of a winter evening, went to London, and began driving from London Bridge, among low-lying waterside wharves and docks and strange places, Bella was in the state of a dreamer, perfectly unable to account for her being there, perfectly unable to forecast what would happen next, or whither she was going, or why. Certain of nothing in the immediate present, but that she confided in John, and that John seemed somehow to be getting more triumphant. But what a certainty was that! They alighted at last at the corner of a court, where there was a building with a bright lamp and wicket gate. Its orderly appearance was very unlike that of the surrounding neighborhood, and was explained by the inscription police station. We are not going in here, John. ," said Bella, clinging to him. Yes, my dear, but of our own accord. We shall come out again as easily, never fear. The whitewashed room was pure white as of old, the methodical bookkeeping was in peaceful progress as of old, and some distant howler was banging against a cell door as of old. The sanctuary was not a permanent abiding place, but a kind of criminal Pickford's. The lower passions and vices were regularly ticked off in the books, warehoused in the cells, carted away as per accompanying invoice, and left little mark upon it. Mr. Inspector placed two chairs for his visitors, before the fire, and communed in a low voice with a brother of his order, also of a half-pay, and Royal Arms aspect, who, judged only by his occupation at the moment, might have been a writing master, setting copies. Their conference done, Mr. Inspector returned to the fireplace, and, having observed that he would step round to the fellowships, and see how matters stood, went out. He soon came back again, saying, nothing could be better, for they're at supper with Miss Abby in the bar, and then they all three went out together. Still, as in a dream, Bella found herself entering a snug old-fashioned public house, and found herself smuggled into a little three-cornered room nearly opposite the bar of that establishment. Mr. Inspector achieved the smuggling of herself, and John into this queer room, called cozy in an inscription on the door, by entering in the narrow passage first in order, and suddenly turning round upon them with extended arms, as if they had been two sheep. The room was lighted for their reception. Now, said Mr. Inspector to John, turning the gas lower, I'll mix with them in a casual way, and when I say identification, perhaps you will show yourself. John nodded, and Mr. Inspector went alone to the half door of the bar. From the dim doorway of Cozy, within which Bella and her husband stood, they could see a comfortable little party of three persons sitting at supper in the bar, and could hear everything that was said. The three persons were Miss Abby and two male guests, to whom collectively, Mr. Inspector remarked that the weather was getting sharp for the time of year. It need be sharp to suit your wits, sir, said Miss Abby. What have you got in hand now? Thanking you for your compliment. Not much, Miss Abby, was Mr. Inspector's rejoinder. Who have you got in Cozy? Asked Miss Abby. Only a gentleman and his wife, miss. And who are they? If one may ask it without detriment to your deep plans in the interests of the honest public? Said Miss Abby, proud of Mr. Inspector as an administrative genius. They are strangers in this part of the town, Miss Abby. They are waiting till I shall want the gentleman to show himself somewhere, for half a moment. While they're waiting, said Miss Abby, couldn't you join us? Mr. Inspector immediately slipped into the bar, and sat down at the side of the half door, with his back towards the passage, and directly facing the two guests. I don't take my supper till later in the night, said he, and therefore I won't disturb the compactness of the table. But I'll take a glass of flip, if that's flip in the jug in the fender. That's flip, replied Miss Abby, and it's my making, and if even you can find out better, I shall be glad to know where. Filling him, with hospitable hands, a steaming tumbler, Miss Abby replaced the jug by the fire, the company not having yet arrived at the flip stage of their supper, but being as yet skirmishing with strong ale. Cried Mr. Inspector. That's the smack. There's not a detective in the force, Miss Abby, that could find out better stuff than that. Glad to hear you say so, rejoined Miss Abby. You ought to know, if anybody does. Mr. Job Poderson, Mr. Inspector continued, I drink your health. Mr. Jacob Kibble, I drink yours. Hope you have made a prosperous voyage home, gentlemen both. Apostrophe, Mr. Kibble, an unctuous broad man of few words and many mouthfuls, said, more briefly than pointedly, raising his ale to his lips. Same to you. Apostrophe, Mr. Job Poderson, a semi-seafaring man of obliging demeanor, said, thank you, sir. Apostrophe, Lord bless my soul and body. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Inspector. Talk of trades, Miss Abby, and the way they set their marks on men, a subject which nobody had approached, who wouldn't know your brother to be a steward. There's a bright and ready twinkle in his eye, there's a neatness in his action, there's a smartness in his figure, there's an air of reliability about him in case he wanted a basin, which points out the steward. And Mr. Kibble, ain't he passenger, all over? While there's that mercantile cut upon him which would make you happy to give him credit for £500, don't you see the salt sea shining on him too? Apostrophe, apostrophe, you do, I dare say, apostrophe, returned Miss Abby, but I don't. And as for stewarding, I think it's time my brother gave that up, and took his house in hand on his sister's retiring. The house will go to pieces if he don't. I wouldn't sell it for any money that could be told out to a person that I couldn't depend upon to be a law to the porters, as I have been. Apostrophe, there you're right, miss, apostrophe, said Mr. Inspector. A better kept house is not known to our men. What do I say? Half so well a kept house is not known to our men. Show the force the six jolly fellowship porters, and the force to a constable, will show you a piece of perfection, Mr. Kibble. Apostrophe, that gentleman, with a very serious shake of his head, subscribed the article. And talk of time slipping by you, as if it was an animal at rustic sports with its tail soaked, apostrophe, said Mr. Inspector again, a subject which nobody had approached. Why, well you may. Well you may. How has it slipped by us, since the time when Mr. Job Poderson here present, Mr. Jacob Kibble here present, and an officer of the force here present, first came together on a matter of identification? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Bella's husband stepped softly to the half door of the bar, and stood there. How has time slipped by us, apostrophe, Mr. Inspector went on slowly, with his eyes narrowly observant of the two guests, since we three very men, at an inquest in this very house, Mr. Kibble. Taken ill, sir? Apostrophe, Mr. Kibble had staggered up, with his lower jaw dropped, catching Poderson by the shoulder, and pointing to the half door. He now cried out, Poderson! Look! Look there! Apostrophe, Poderson started up, started back, and exclaimed, Heaven defend us, what's that? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Bella's husband stepped back to Bella, took her in his arms, for she was terrified by the unintelligible terror of the two men, and shut the door of the little room. A hurry of voices succeeded, in which Mr. Inspector's voice was busiest. It gradually slackened and sank, and Mr. Inspector reappeared. Sharp's the word, sir. Apostrophe, he said, looking in with a knowing wink. We'll get your lady out at once. Apostrophe, immediately, Bella and her husband were under the stars, making their way back, alone, to the vehicle they had kept in waiting. All this was most extraordinary, and Bella could make nothing of it, but that John was in the right. How in the right, and how suspected of being in the wrong, she could not divine. Some vague idea, that he had never really assumed the name of Hanford, and that there was a remarkable likeness between him, and that mysterious person, was her nearest approach to any definite explanation. But John was triumphant, that much was made apparent, and she could wait for the rest. When John came home to dinner next day, he said, sitting down on the sofa by Bella and baby Bella, My dear, I have a piece of news to tell you. I have left the China house. Apostrophe, as he seemed to like having left it, Bella took it for granted that there was no misfortune in the case. In a word, My love, apostrophe said John, the China House is broken up and abolished. There is no such thing anymore. Apostrophe, then, are you already in another house, John? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, my darling. I am in another way of business. And I am rather better off. Apostrophe, the inexhaustible baby was instantly made to congratulate him, and to say, with appropriate action on the part of a very limp arm and a speckled fist, three cheers, ladies and gemplemrums. Hooray! Apostrophe, apostrophe, I am afraid, my life, apostrophe said John, that you have become very much attached to this cottage? Apostrophe, apostrophe, afraid I have, John? Of course I have. Apostrophe, the reason why I said afraid, apostrophe returned John, is, because we must move. Apostrophe, oh John. Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, my dear, we must move. We must have our headquarters in London now. In short, there's a dwelling house rent-free, attached to my new position, and we must occupy it. Apostrophe, that's a gain, John. Apostrophe, yes, my dear, it is undoubtedly a gain. Apostrophe, he gave her a very blithe look, and a very sly look, which occasioned the inexhaustible baby to square at him with the speckled fists, and demand in a threatening manner what he meant. My love, you said it was a gain, and I said it was a gain. A very innocent remark, surely. Apostrophe, I won't, apostrophe said the inexhaustible baby, apostrophe allow you to make game of my venerable ma. Apostrophe at each division administering a soft facer with one of the speckled fists. John having stooped down to receive these punishing visitations, Bella asked him, would it be necessary to move soon? Why yes, indeed, said John, he did propose that they should move very soon. Taking the furniture with them, of course? Said Bella. Why, no, said John. The fact was, that the house was in a sort of Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.